Okay, let's begin. Superstition and Ayin Hara. The first source on the sheet is Stevie Wonder. Very superstitious. Writings on the wall. I just thought the great lines, the words were very apropos. Very superstitious. The ladder is about to fall. 13-month-old baby. I don't know that one. Broke the looking glass. 7 years of bad luck. The good things in your past. When you believe in things that you don't understand, then you suffer. Superstition ain't the way. So is he right or is he wrong? Why am I doing it this week? So if you look at the Mishnah in Avos, that's probably going to be quoted in Shul at some point, at least once this Shabbos. Mishnah in Avos, Kol Mishmi Sheyesh Biyado Shlosha Dvarim Halal Mitalmidav Shal Avraham Avinu Ushlosha Dvarim Acherim Mitalmidav Shal Bilam HaRasha. Anybody who has the following three traits is from the students of Avraham Avinu, and anybody who has the other three traits is from the Talmidim of Bilam HaRasha. What are they? So when it comes to Avraham, Ayin Tova Beruach Nemucha Benefesh Shvela. Somebody who has a good eye, a low, they're both the same, a low spirit, and a lowly soul, are from the Talmid of Avraham Avinu. And then the other hand, Ayin Ra'ah, Ruach Gavoah, V'Nefesh Rechavah, Mitalmid of Shel Bilam HaRasha. So anybody who has an Ayin Ra'ah is from Talmid of Shel Bilam HaRasha. Now, when you look at this Mishnah, right, Ayin Ra'ah doesn't seem to be the same thing as Ayin Hara, right? Ayin Ra'ah over here could be just somebody who looks at things badly, who's skeptical, who's cynical, who's always trying to make things bad. So this is not really going to be, you know, that scary or that surprising. You could be Mitamidu Mishal Bil Marasha and have no supernatural powers, just somebody who's cynical. But the Gemara Brachos takes it a step further, not specifically with Ayin Hara, but with Bilam's powers. The Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan further said in the name of Rabbi Yossi, how do you know that you must not try to placate a man in time of his anger? For it is written, my face will go and I will give thee rest. So you're not supposed to try to calm somebody down while they're angry. The Holy One, blessed be He, said to Moses, wait till my countenance of wrath shall have passed away, and then I shall give thee rest. So then the Gemara says, but is anger then a mood of the Holy One, blessed be He? Wait a second. The source for the idea that you're not supposed to calm somebody down when they're angry is God? Does God really get angry? So the Gemara says, yes, for it has been taught, a God that hath indignation every day, za'am. And how long does this za'am last? 1 moment. I love this Gemara. How long is 1 moment? 158,888th part of an hour. I have no idea what that corresponds to in actual time. And no creature has ever been able to fix precisely this moment except the wicked Bilam. It sounds like this is an actual time of the day, right? And it is a specific time of the day. That he knows the knowledge of the Most High. This is a citation from our parsha, right? Yodea Da'at Elyon. That's how Bilam is described. Now, he didn't even know the mind of his animal. How then could he know the mind of the Most High? How could he know God's knowledge if he didn't even know his animal's knowledge? Now, so it says the meaning is therefore only that he knew how to fix precisely this moment in which the Holy One, blessed be He, is angry. He knew that moment, that one, whatever it is, 158,800, whatever. He knew exactly when that moment was. And this is just what the prophet said to Israel, oh my people, remember now what Balak, king of Moab, devised, and what Balaam, the son of Beor, answered him, that you may know the righteous acts of the Lord. What does it mean? What does that mean? Well, Elazar says, see now how many righteous acts I performed for you in not being angry in the days of wicked Balaam. In other words, God does have that moment, apparently, but Balaam tried to tap into it, and God just simply did not get angry. For had I been angry, not one remnant would have been left of the enemies of Israel. That's a euphemism for Israel himself. And this, too, is the meaning of what Balaam said to Balak. I have no idea why they translate Balaam as Balaam. I really, that has perplexed me. All, you know, fancy translations of Tanakh always take Bil'am and turn it into Bal'am. Does anybody know why? Is there a Patach under there in some version of Torah? I don't get it.
In English.
But why isn't it Bil'am? Why is it Bal'am? I don't get it.
Bal'am.
Anyways, how shall I curse whom God hath not cursed, and how shall I execrate? Ooh. Whom the Lord hath not executed. Okay, so Bilam failed to curse us. This teaches us that he was not angry at all these days, and how long does his anger last? 1 moment. Okay, fine. So the Gemara continues about what a ragai is. I brought this to show you that Bilam did have some kind of special knowledge that allowed him to do something, and one might call this an ayin hara, something like that, perhaps. Some ability to cause to cause damage to everybody.
The exact right moment.
Exactly. So actually, the Tosos talks about it. It says, what could he have actually said in that moment? What could he, if it's such a short moment, what could he say? So Tosos says he was going to say Kla'em. That's what he was going to say. Tosos says that takes a little bit longer to say than whatever this measurement is. So Tosos says, as long as you start at the right moment, you can continue, and it's like Toch Kedei Dibor type of thing. And I remember, if I remember correctly, the Aruch HaShulchan wants to use that to say that if you start Shmona Esrei before Shkia at Mincha, it's okay even if you go after Shkia. But nobody agrees with him. But he wants to use that Tosos, if I remember correctly. Okay. Anyways, that was just to set the tone with the supernatural element over here, with Bil'am specifically. Another place where this comes up, there's so many sources by this way, it's just, I would not even be able to bring everything. I wouldn't even say I've brought Ikrei Dvarim, like the main things. I just brought the things that were at hand that I was able to find quickly. So one of the things that I think that we should do, maybe we'll do it next time, I don't know, is learn about Ayin Hara and Halacha, because that's where you get to see in practice how we treat it, as well as Ayin Hara in Tefillah, because it is mentioned in Tefillah, but not this time. This time we'll get the underpinnings, and maybe next time we'll do something like that, and then maybe we'll branch off into other of these supernatural matters and understand how does Torah really view these things, and are there different viewpoints? Obviously there are. So let's first see some basic things that we probably have learned before, but we just didn't really concentrate on them in this context. So for example, Parashas Kitisa, Kitisa Rosh Bnei Yisrael Lefkudeihem V'Nadnu Ish Kofer Nafsho LaHashem Bifkodotam V'Lo Yehem Bahem Negef Bifkodotam. Right, this is Parashas Kitisa. It talks about counting the people, and we know, David, we're not supposed to count people for a minyan or for anything. You're not supposed to count people, not heads and not names or anything like that. You shouldn't point at them and count numbers. We have all kinds of fancy phrases that we use in order to avoid counting them and count them in a roundabout way. That's okay. We're not supposed to count people. If you're going to count their shkalim, then that's okay. What happens if you count people? So the Torah says really bad things. Negef bifkodotam. There's going to be a plague. Rashi says, Oli abem negef shaminyan sholet bo ayin hara. See, I think everybody knows that there's this concept of not counting people, but we don't really associate it with Ayin Hara. Did you associate it with Ayin Hara, Jake?
I think it was the default one. Yeah.
That's, it was like, if you said, okay, why shouldn't we count people? Oh, I don't want to cause an Ayin Hara. It's not what I would have said.
Why not?
I don't know. I would have said it's some generic, you shouldn't count people because, I don't know, because it's bad luck. Or not bad luck, necessarily. I don't know, but no, I mean the words Ayin Hara. Would you have associated with Ayin Hara specifically? Fine. Ayin Hara. V'adavar ba'aleihem. K'mo shematzeinu b'mei David. It actually happened in the time of David. David counted the people. This is its own discussion about what exactly went wrong when David counted the people. Ayin the Ramban over here in Parshas Kitisa. What exactly went wrong with David? Bottom line is, al pi pashtut, David counted the people for his own honor. And he didn't do it with a proxy. And they caused a plague. He caused a plague, which only stopped the whole story in the Gemara about it. It's a fantastic story. Not talking about it right now. But either way, Rashi really brings it to the fore. This is something that could apply now, right? Counting people can cause an Ayin Hara. Rabbi Yeshua Omer Ayin Hara V'Yitzhar Hara. By the way, what's the quality of this? How does it work? Do we know how it works? Counting people causes an Ayin Hara because Minyan Sholeit Bo Ayin Hara. Once you start counting people, you create some kind of reality where apparently Ayin Hara can be controlling. How? Why? Don't know. Different Mishnah in Avos, not the one we read before, which Ayin Ra'a we said, not so convincing, but Rabbi Yeshua Omer Ayin Hara V'Yetzer Hara V'Sinat HaBriyot Motzi'in Et HaAdam Min HaOlam. Okay, once again, I could have interpreted this as, a bad eye, somebody who looks at things cynically, skeptically, miserly, something like that. But that's not how Rabbeinu Yonah reads it. Rabbeinu Yonah of Gerona, cousin of the Ramban, says Rabbi Yoshua Omer Ayin Hara Perish Misheinu Samech Bechalko V'Oyen Et Chavero HaAshir Mimenu Matay Yasher Osher Gadol Kamo V'Gorem Ra LaAtzmo. All right, says This is reasonable. We could buy this. A person who is not happy with his lot, and he sees his friend who is rich, and he says, "When am I going to be rich like that, like my friend?" And he's causing evil to himself because he's going to become consumed by his jealousy. If he had stopped there, we would have said, "Great, awesome, I understand. Motzi atata min ha'olam, I get it." But then he continues, "Ulechavero, kasher amru chachmei ha'teva." Says like the scientists say, "Mikol asher le'reihu avir ole min ha'machshava hu, v'sorefet ha'dvarim sho'ayin behem be'inav hara." Because when a person looks at something with an evil eye, we're going to get back to this later, then he burns things in the world. There's an avir that comes off of him. Gam bekir bo yisref acher shemitavel ledvarim shein yicholet b'matzur biyado la'asot ha'machshava ha'i mekalkelet gufo kitkatzer rucho motziato min ha'olam v'zeu ayin hara. Shamar b'yoshua v'ray elazeh ha'pirish al sha'amar b'kan ayin hara b'lashon zachar shezeu ha'oyein b'ra. Somebody who looks evilly.
Looking at it negatively, or is it what will happen to you? It's not the jealousy, it's the fact that you are missing out the godliness of it. When you count people, then you're missing out that you just are counting items. It's constraining only to what I see.
Why does that affect the people themselves then?
Because they're missing the perspective that it's...
Who? Who's missing that perspective?
I just wanted to say, ayin hara is in the eyes of the...
Is the person who's... Well, look.
It's what happens to the person?
We don't know yet. We have a few data points. We have Rashi, who explains lo yabam negef as the minyan. Because they're being counted, all of a sudden, ayin hara is sholet behem, which sounds like an external force that is able to do something to them. That's how Rashi sounds.
Because you're limiting what you see. You're limiting the presence of... You only are counting, and you're actually saying that there's only 10 people here and nothing more. There's
I hear your rational explanation for it. And so I raise you. So why does that affect the people? It should affect the person counting. Shouldn't it? Then we have the mission of us, which again could have been read innocuously. Ayin hara is like what Jake is saying. It causes damage to you. You're the one who's the problem. That's how Rabbeinu Yonah starts.
That's the difference. That's what he's saying, Roshon Zachar. The first Mishnah we read, it's Ayin Ra'ah.
Right.
And here it's Ayin Ra.
Right. Right.
Ayin is supposed to be Ayin Ra'ah. Ayin is Ayin Achat, right? Like anything, it's all in feminine. Mm-hmm. But Ayin Ra,
right,
cannot be a bad eye.
Okay.
A bad eye is Ayin Ra'ah.
Okay.
Not Ayin Ra.
Right.
So Ayin Ra is something, it's not a bad eye, it's something else. It's something.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Ayin is the pen, what Ayin is lost in the cable?
Ayin, yeah. I was Naim. Anything that's double, and then the two of?
So the Ayin is
feminine.
Hang on, so I try to read this, I don't understand a little.
Which part?
What are they hearing the saying? I want to go off the page. As in Ul Chavero, from that point onwards.
From Chavero, Ul Chavero, Kasher Amru Chachmei Ateva.
Yeah.
Mikol Asher Le'Re'ehu, Avir Ole Min Hamachshava Hu, V'Soreif Et Hadvarim She'Oyein Bahem Beinav Hara'ah. He burns the things that are bothering him.
And this is what Chachmei Ateva is saying.
Yes. We'll get back to that later.
Gam
bikir bo yisaref achar, and he says himself he's going to be burned. Achar shemitavel dvarim sheini cholet mat. This is he's saying he's being eaten up by his jealousy. That's gam. Yeah, it's gam. Gam bikir bo. It sounds like he's saying both. To me, it sounds like he's saying both.
Right, because like
nothing. It's both. Both things are happening. Yeah.
Three points even.
Yeah, I mean, because he's saying Gorem Rada Atzmo. And then even worse, it sounds like on a totally psychological plane, Gorem Rada Atzmo, I think. And then he says it happens, something bad happens to his friend. And then also, Gam Bikir Bo Yisarif, Achashim Yitavel, Dvarim Shein Yecholet Matzur Biyado. He's Mekalkel Gufo. Maybe that's even psychosomatic. He's saying it's you're going to actually feel the stress of that jealousy.
just like saying they can make you back home.
That's the which part?
Like the second, as in the chavero is comma.
It sounds like it's more than that. Yeah, we'll get to it. There may be a distinction between karma and what he's describing. Okay, let's continue. There are those that are actually protected from this, by the way. And Yehoshua, these are specifically Jewish guys. The concept of ayin hara is not exclusive to us. The idea of an evil eye is an ancient idea. But here you have some interesting things that we've added. Yehoshua said to them, right, this is when Yehoshua is dividing up the land. So some of the tribes came to complain that they didn't like the portion they were getting. It wasn't big enough, it wasn't in the right place. Yehoshua said, if thou be a great people, get thee up to the forest. This is what he said to the Bnei Yosef. If you have too many people, so go into the forest. It is that, he said to them, go and hide yourselves in the forest so that an evil eye may have no power over you. He wasn't just telling them to go to the forest. He was saying, go hide in the forest because you really do have so many people. You don't want anybody to see you have so many people because it won't be good for you. They said unto him, we are the seed of Joseph. Over whom the evil eye has no power. As it is written, Joseph is a fruitful vine by a fountain. And Rabbi Abba said, do not render by the fountain, but those who transcend the eye. Ole ayin. Right, that Yosef is above the eye. It's interesting they use above because look at the opposite. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Chanina said, "This is inferred from the following verse: and let them grow like fishes into a multitude in the midst of the earth." V'yidgu la'rov bekerev ha'aretz, that we say to our kids all the time, and we don't really know. You know, we don't, and they should be like fish. V'yidgu la'rov bekerev ha'aretz. This means that as the fishes in the sea are covered by water and no eye has any power over them, so in the case of the seed of Joseph, no evil eye has any power over them. This is a tradition that we have about the Bnei Yosef, Parat Yosef. Parat Alei Ayin, yeah. So what's the beginning of the phrase? Ben Parat Yosef, Ben Parat Alei Ayin. Yeah. They're above the eye and also below the eye. It's an interesting thing. This also, by the way, wasn't only in the times of the Chumash, but also later on. This was extended. Rav Gidal was accustomed to go and sit at the gates of the bathing place. This is one of these great stories. He used to go to the mikvah, not the men's mikvah. He used to say to the women who came to bathe, bathe thus or bathe thus. He would give them advice about how to go to the mikvah. You know, the truth is some women actually need help with this. They don't know how to... on a dunk. Rabbi said to him, is not the master afraid lest his passion get the better of him? Aren't you afraid of, you know, it's going to be a scandal? He replied, they look to me like so many white geese. He said, no, because I'm not affected by them at all. Fine. Different story. Rav Yochanan was accustomed to go and sit at the gates of the bathing place, and he said, when the daughters of Israel come up from bathing, they look at me and they have children as handsome as I am. So Rav Gidal would see the women as they went in, and he would give them advice. And Rav Yochanan would just sit outside and be the first thing that they saw when they came out of the mikvah. Right? There's a tradition that the first thing that a woman sees when she gets out of the mikvah, that affects what the baby will look like. Said the rabbis to him, is not the master afraid of the evil eye? He replied, I come from the seed of Joseph, over whom the evil eye has no power. As it is written, Joseph is a fruit of a vine above the eye. And Rabbi Abba said, with regard to this, not Rei Ali Ayin, Ela Olei Ayin, that's what we said before. So he said, I'm from the seed of Joseph, so I don't have to worry about Ayin Hara. And then they quote Yidgu Larov also. By the way, in the story, the famous story about Elizabeth and Azariah and Rabbi Gamliel, the one that we always remember on Seder night, the way that Rabbi Yehoshua and Rabbi Gamliel used to get in these fights, and then they had to kick Rabbi Gamliel out of the Beis Medrash. He had to be his nasi privileges were revoked, and they had to appoint a new nasi. And one of the most logical appointee was. No, huh. He was not logical because he was too young. The most logical appointee was, first they said Rabbi Yehoshua, but they said they couldn't do Rabbi Yehoshua because he's no Geba Davar. And then the next logical one was Rabbi Akiva. But Rabbi Akiva's problem was that he didn't have Yichus. He didn't have Yichus, he wasn't from Ezra, and I believe Ezra is from Yosef. Am I making a mistake here? Y'all, can you get me a Gemara? Gemara Brachus? I believe that's what it was, and so he wasn't protected. I think he wasn't protected by his yichus, and he wasn't from Yosef, and so I know he wasn't from Ezra, and that was the point. But I think it was because I think Aleph, because it's on like Kaf Dalet or something. That's the story. I think. Let me see. Let's check it out. Kaf Dalet, beginning of the. No, I think it's. Wait, ah, cut out here.
We knew that.
I think it's Kafvav. It's Kafvav because
yeah,
it's.
Yeah, I'm saying it's not Kafvav. It's Kafvav. The...
It's
Kafvav.
Here.
Cool,
as
in
cool. No. No. Zayin? Where is it? It would be. Where would it be? Ah, here we go. Kaf Zayin Amud Bet. Kaf Zayin Amud Bet. You should all read the story inside.
He wanted to contradict the rabbi. That's why.
Schus Avos. He didn't have Schus Avos. So what is Schus Avos? So do this. Rabbi Kiva may not have Schus Avos because Rabbi Kiva was a Ben Gerim. So maybe I'm just totally misremembering the story. It has nothing to do with Yosef. The point was he had no schus avos because he was son of converts. Yeah, no, I'm wrong. Yeah, he had nothing. It has nothing to do with Yosef. It has to do with he was the son of converts, so he didn't have schus avos. So they were worried that something bad would happen to him. But this is talking about Yosef, and apparently being from the seed of Joseph is enough to protect you. I think the simplest explanation for that was the way that Yosef protected his mother when Esav came.
He went before.
He went in front of Rachel to protect her from Esav, and so the way that he wasn't afraid of Esav's eyes, so to speak, maybe that's why he was protected. Another explanation might be that he had a great degree of humility, which we're going to see is going to be important with regard to Ayin Hara. So that's just some of the sources like of Tanakh and of Gemara that refer to Ayin Hara without giving any explanation of how it works. Just seeing that it is a phenomenon that exists in the tradition. Yeah. So let's see some explanations of how it actually works. So for here, this we're turning to our parasha actually, the Or HaChaim. Or HaChaim, Rav Chaim Ibn Attar, one of the great, 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 great important Mefarshei Chumash, Baalei Kabbalah, Sfardi, I think the Baal Shem Tov said he lived around the time of the Baal Shem Tov. He lived like he's younger than the Baal Shem Tov. I don't know if he's actually younger. I know he died before the Baal Shem Tov died. But the Baal Shem Tov claimed that if he ever got together with the Or HaChaim, Or HaChaim lived in Israel. And the Baal Shem Tov lived in Europe. And if they ever got together, they would have brought Mashiach. But they never did get together. Oh well. So Or HaChaim writes, so he says, Yesh la'ir b'yikar davar shal ha'ish ha'mikulal, ha'mikulal. Miman efshach imu chayav kafi adin ra'a haba'a elav b'emtzot ha'klala al kol panim lo yinatzal mimena ki gam ki lo yikulal. He says, what's the deal with the person who gets cursed? So he's talking about from the perspective of what Bilam is doing to the Jewish people, right? Why should the Jewish people be affected, or anybody be affected, by the curse of somebody else? Bimaneshach. Imu chayav kfiyadin ra'a haba'a alav b'amtzahut haklala al kopanim lo yinatzal mimena gam ki lo yikulal. If he deserves punishment by himself, then he'll get the punishment even if he wasn't cursed. Right? Vimu kfi mishpat Elohim lo asa davar sheyitchayev alav b'yadara kilalato tashuv al rosh hamekalel. And if he didn't do anything wrong, and he doesn't deserve to have any bad effects from the curse, then the curse should boomerang back on the person who cursed him. So he says, I understand bracha. Bracha, mida tova meruba. Bracha, does it bother anybody that you can give a bracha to somebody and that we believe that it will work? Somehow that doesn't bother people, right? You go up to a chassan at the end of the wedding, everybody makes a line, and you get a bracha from the chassan. A rabbi walks by in the street, you recognize him, you go and you get a bracha. This doesn't bother people. No? I mean, maybe it bothers some people, but it doesn't bother most people. But he says, Bishlama, fine. Mida tova meruba mina paranut. It makes sense that Hashem is willing to give out brachot to people, even if they don't deserve it. That doesn't bother us. But the idea that he's going to punish people, even though they don't deserve it, just because somebody cursed them, גם לעשות השם רצון ידידיו לברך המתברכים בהם במידת החסד תקובל ברכתו גם למי שאינו ראוי לה כמו מעשיו. But he says, but it shouldn't work the other way. Bottom line, I understand that bracha should work, but why should klala work? So he says, according to the Midah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he is ma'arich apo, which means when somebody does something wrong, he doesn't attack them right away, right? No lightning bolts that come down and burn you up the moment you do something wrong. And it doesn't matter whether you're a tzaddik or a rasha, it doesn't matter. It's one of the Yud-Gimel Midos, Ma'arich Apayim, Ma'arich Af. Tamid Zulat Beit Asher Yizom Hashem, except when Hashem gets angry. It works except for that one moment. That's the question. The pasuk that we quoted at the beginning of the shir, talking about Bilam. As Midgabrim Adinim Ala Nidba B'Mishpat B'Otozman V'Lotit Neheg Midazu Shalarech Apayim. In that one moment, when Hashem gets, so to speak, angry, whatever that means, I can't claim I know what it means, whatever it means, in that one moment, his Erech HaPayim goes away, and you get what you deserve. Ukmoken, so he says, by analogy, it's different but similar. Kishi kalel adam et chaviro, tisoveva klala, shavonotav, asher Hashem ma'arich lo apo aleim, yimaher li parami menu. So what did he say? He said, "Klala doesn't work in a vacuum. It doesn't work on its own. The way that it works is that pretty much everybody deserves a little bit of onesh at almost any given moment. But Hashem is merciful and he's ma'arich af and he withholds that punishment." And so you don't get affected. But if somebody were to come along and do a klala, that has the power, spiritual power, mystical power, to at least poke a hole in the Erech HaPayim of Hashem, and then you get what you deserve. You don't get something that you don't deserve. You get what you deserve, which you might not have gotten if it wasn't for the klala. What comes to mind is one of my favorite stories in the Gemara. It's a almost impenetrable story, except Rav Aaron Levine Zatzal, who was the rabbi of the Young Israel of Avenue J in Brooklyn, and also one of the really, really big economics professors in YU. So he gave a great explanation for it, which I really liked. The story about Kushta. Have you ever heard of the story about Kushta in the Gemara?
City that no one...
Yeah. So Kushta literally means truth. And Kishmo Kenhu, it was a city where nobody ever lied for any reason. Nobody lied. And the Gemara tells a story about one of the Amoraim. I forget his name. I think even it's not really his name. The Gemara gives a name, and then I think it says it may be this person, maybe that person. Either way, he was a very honest person, so he felt that he should go. He's not from that town, but he said, "I'm so honest that I should go to that town." So he goes to live in the town with his wife and his kids. After a few weeks in the town, somebody comes to knock on the door, and I think his wife answers the door, and they ask if he's home, and he was showering, and she didn't feel it was appropriate to say he was showering, and so she said he's not home. The Gemara says a few days later, their kids both died. Ah, I forgot a prat, an important prat. In this town where nobody lied, nobody died before their time. Nobody got sick. Nobody got murdered. Nobody got in a car accident. Nobody got into freak sporting accidents. Nothing. Nobody ever died early. Everybody died seiva tova, like late in life. So the idea that these two boys, two children, died early was never happened. Some point during the shiva, this is one of these like videos, you know, shtick people say at the shiva. Somebody came over and said, "Listen, im kol hakavod, you know, we feel very bad for you, but how did this happen? This has never happened in our town before. What happened?" So he said, he told the story. He said, "My wife, you know, she didn't want to say that I wasn't home, that I was in the shower, so she said I wasn't home." So they said, "Ah, we understand. We feel terrible, but you have to leave. You can't stay. We can't have people who aren't loyal to the truth." That's the way the Gemara ends. This is an impenetrable Gemara. There was a perfectly legitimate reason for the women to lie. And the proportion over here a tiny little thing, and then the kids, it's crazy. It doesn't make any sense. So Rabbi Levine said, no, you misunderstood. It's not like min hadin, because she lied, the kids were killed as punishment. No, no, no. This town has a huge force field around it, which basically causes miracles to happen every day. Nobody dies early. Nobody. Even people who deserve it don't die early. These kids, apparently, there was a decree that they should die. And if she hadn't lied, they would have been saved with the same force field as everybody else. It was because there was a hole that got poked in the force field that it happened, but not because they deserve it, because that was always supposed to happen anyways, and they were going to be protected if she hadn't lied. And that's the explanation that he gave over there, which I think is as good as any explanation I've ever... I can't think of any explanation that's any better than that. And the story, whether it happened or not, is irrelevant, but you have to explain the Gemara, because Shalom Bayis is one of the reasons you're allowed to lie, and keeping people's dignity is one of the reasons you're allowed to lie. It's perfectly legitimate to lie. The point is that there's always going to be consequences. There's also, what was I thinking of?
Why is it not okay? He's in the shower.
Nimusim. I don't know. Culture. It wasn't okay. She didn't feel it was appropriate to say that he was in the shower. Different strokes. I don't know. I can't say. I was just thinking of something and I forgot it.
So the parallel is with Ayin Hara.
Yeah, so the parallel with the Or HaChaim would be that the Or HaChaim is saying it's not that when somebody curses you, that causes you to be punished. Like you don't deserve the punishment, and now he cursed you, and now you deserve it. No, it's that when he curses you, it pokes a hole in the force field of Hashem's Erech HaPayim. You deserved it anyways. Ah, that's what I was thinking of. What's the bracha that we make when we? What's the bracha that we make when you're when you go through a dangerous experience and you come out the other side? A gomel, you bench a gomel. You ever think about the words there? Hagomel chayavim tovot. What does that mean?
People who chayav.
You went through a dangerous experience. You deserved to not come out of the other side. We all don't deserve to come out the other side. Who among us can say that we deserve to come out the other side of every dangerous experience? So you have to say thank you to Hashem because He saved us. Even though we don't deserve to be saved. Hagomel chayavim tovot. The Rechaim says, there are some people who don't deserve it. If a person was walking by that didn't deserve any onesh, then no matter how many curses you threw at him, nothing would happen. Because he doesn't deserve onesh. So according to the Rechaim, that's the way that the whole structure of Ayin Hara works. That it creates a hole in the force field. I dare say that somehow this fits in also with the counting. In other words, I don't know exactly what the connection would be between klala and counting, and maybe what Jake is saying is like you're removing some of the, I don't know, the mystique, the majesty, the divinity of people by counting them. But the idea is that somehow it removes the Erech HaPayim, and so naturally Onesh rushes in to fill that void, perhaps. So that would be one explanation. That's the Or HaChaim's explanation of Ayin Hara. Spiritual, but he adds the rationality. He's bothered by the rationality of it. You have another middle ground answer over here from Rav Eliyahu Dessler. This is from Michtav Eliyahu. I should have put the source on the top. It's from Michtav Eliyahu. He says, Kacha Adam mekaneh b'chaviro ומביט בו בעין רעה, הרי הסברנו איך כוח זה של עין הרע יכול להזיק לחברו. He uses עין הרע, עין רעה interchangeably, by the way.
Yep.
So he says, we've already said how עין הרע works. How does it work? הרי לא דינה בלא דינה. He's bothered by the same thing as the Or HaChaim. It's not fair. If there's no din, then why should you be punished? ובמה שם חברו שמידת הדין פוגעת בו? What did the person who is מקולל, what did he do? ביארנו אז שיתכן שהוא נתבע במידת הדין מפני שהוא גרם במידה מסוימת שהראשון יקנה בו. Ayin Hara is very simple. If you cause somebody to become jealous of you such that they look at you with an Ayin Hara, then to that degree you deserve to be judged. הרי בדוק ומנוסה הוא שמי שאינו חי בעד עצמו כלל והוא נותן ולא נוטל בכל ענייניו, איש כזה אינו מעורר קנאה כלל. A person who is always giving and never taking, he does not cause any jealousy. Ayin Hara can't touch him. Kach Amru Zal Al Zaro Shal Yosef De Lo Shalta Ba Ina Bisha Echtiv Ben Parat Yosef Ben Parat Elian Ayn Shalor Atzda Lazun Mima She Eino Shalo Ein Ayn Ara Shaletet Bo. The Gemara says it Mefurash. It says an eye that doesn't want to take what is not his, in other words, who does not get, does not, well, here it really is saying some person who doesn't get jealous will not be affected by Ein Ara. So that's almost the inverse, but okay. V'yesh Adar Shal Atom Yidachtiv V'yidgul Arov Ma Dagim Shabayam, he said. Dagim Eilu Yesh Behem Shnei Anyanim. So he says, what's the deal with the fish? Hem Mechusim In Ayin Ve'em Chayim Kilu Ba'olam Acher Ve'ena Mitcharim Im Yoshvei Yabasha Klal. Interesting. He says, as a fish has two yitronot. Number one, they're hidden away, so nobody can see them. Nobody notices them, so nobody can be jealous of them. And number two, because they're in a different world, they're not mitchara. None of us feel like we're in a competition with the fish, right?
And they don't have this.
They don't have?
Eyelids.
Oh, okay. That's true. But I think his point is, like, you walk towards the ocean, you're on this side, fish are on that side, and we're not, you know, if you go into a forest, right, you have to be afraid of lions and bears and tigers and snakes and everything like that. We're all in the same world. But fish are in a different world, so we're not involved with them. So that's the sense that you get when you talk to a person who doesn't make you jealous, because you're totally different. You're living in different worlds.
Isn't Ayin Hara only about jealousy?
Yes. For him, Ayin Hara is only about jealousy. I don't know what he's going to do with the counting.
But jealousy means a lot of things.
But I don't understand that King David, when he's counting his people, he wasn't doing it out of jealousy. He was doing it out of maybe boastfulness there. He wasn't jealous of someone else's nation.
But what is he doing? He's saying, wow. Ramban says, wow, look how many people I have. That's what he was doing.
Yeah, that's not jealousy.
No, that's causing jealousy. No. Ayin Hara, for the Rav Dessler, what happens is that if you do something that causes somebody else to be jealous of you, that person is going to look at you with an Ayin Hara, and you will be affected.
Still not
that's right. The idea. You're ma'orer the Ayin Hara.
That's right.
By flaunting what you have, you create a situation where people are going to be jealous of you, and that itself will bring upon you,
like your Quran,
the Ayin Hara.
Yeah, they don't drive anymore.
So in the case of David, people were jealous that David had so many people.
He created a reality where he was trying to show off how many subjects he had. That's how the Ramban understands what he was doing. Now, how would it have been any different if he would have counted it with something else? I don't know. There's something special over there with the counting. I don't know exactly what it is. But so far we've seen, you know, mystical rational explanations. We've seen that, you know, Or Chaim says that it's not that the klala itself affects you, it just affects something else indirectly which affects you. And the Rav Dessler says that it does affect you, but there is a rational way to understand why it affects you. It creates kin'ah, and now you've caused pain to somebody else, so Hashem is going to take that out on you. You deserve it. You deserve it.
Because you caused pain.
Yeah. But now we go to the Maharsha. So the Maharsha says something different. Maharsha says, "Kamo shematzinu sheyesh b'koach b'nefesh ha'adam lif'ol be'eino latov k'dichtiv tov ayin hu yivorach ve'ein b'chefech b'ra ayin kibil'am u'bekam b'komot k'hutze b'ze b'dibro ha'kal k'damina al tehe b'rachat hedyot v'al tehe k'lilat hedyot kala b'einecha." So this is actually a Gemara about the dreams. But the Maharsha says, basically, as a matter of fact, he just says, people have power. People have power to affect things with their eyes. People have power to affect things with their mouths. A klala actually works. It works. And a bracha works because we have special power. He doesn't say, you know, not deserve it, not deserve it. You are able to be mekalel other people and it will do something. You are able to look at people with an evil eye and it will do something. Very simple. Spiritual.
Yeah, what? They don't explain it
problematic.
In what sense is it problematic? It's the simplest explanation for all of this.
Before, if you don't deserve something bad happened to you, then you don't deserve it.
If you don't deserve, can I punch you in the face right now?
Go ahead.
Will you say afterwards, okay, it must be that I deserved it? If you're very holy, maybe you will. But chances are you'll say, no, you're just a jerk, and you punched me in the face, and that's why it happened. I can affect you with my body, can't I? So why can't I affect you with my mind, or with my eyes, and with my mouth?
Because this is more spiritual, so they deserve some explanation.
So that is the explanation. The explanation is that just like I can affect you physically, there are spiritual ways for me to affect you, even if you don't deserve it, with my mouth and with my eye. Things that I can't see and I can't explain, but they happen. Stop looking at me like that.
It happens when we don't know exactly how.
No, but Marsha does seem to be keeping it in the realm of what I would call Torah spirituality, I think. All right? But now, take a step towards... I guess Rashi's also keeping it. I assume Rashi's keeping it there. Rashi, there's another place where I didn't remember Rashi using these words. When Sarai Menu sends away Hagar and Yishmael, so it says... I'm on the last page. Et hayeled af hayeled al shechma shechnisa bo sara ayin ra'a v'achasto chema v'lo yachol elech beraglav. Sarah looked at him with an evil eye and he became sick and he couldn't walk. Okay, so that's like very ashar, very direct, like totally Rashi.
Who to
that was Rashi. Sarah to Yishmael. I didn't remember that either. I just didn't remember it. The words I and R, I just never, I didn't remember that those were the words used. But now here comes the fun one, okay? You've all heard of the Torah Tamimah, yes? Rav Baruch Epstein, Baruch Levi Epstein, author of the Torah. Torah Tamimah is a work which is very useful. It's the Perush is basically bringing all the Gemaras on every, most of the Gemaras on every Pasuk. So if you look up a Pasuk in the Torah Tamimah, he brings every Gemara, every place in Shas where this Pasuk is explained. And then he has a commentary on the bottom sometimes that explains more. But he wrote another Sefer called the Tosefes Bracha, which we actually have in the Shul. Rabban David likes to use it a lot. And this is what appears in the Tosefes Bracha on our Parsha. Look at this. Vian. Ki yesh anashim asher lo libam holech lahamin bakoach shlitat ayin me'adam ra o bepulato lahara. There are some people who don't believe that man has the ability to do anything with his eyes. They don't believe in ayin hara. I will write down here a story that is recorded about this. With an actual occurrence that happened and it's like it's in front of our eyes. I don't know how to read this word. A Russian newspaper. He's going to write down in his sefer a story from a Russian newspaper. The Shanat Amedina, 1881. Gilyonot Shtayim Shalosh Yisupar. And the place where I got this from, by the way, the rabbi who was looking at Rabbi Danny Raps, which is like where I got most of the sources for this. So he actually Googled it and found the original article and then found some secondary sources on the article itself. So he says, They were trying to research the power of a person to affect the world through staring. So what do? I don't know what it is. In a Russian, I don't know. There was a man who was on death row. Been on death row, and they asked permission from the government. The academies asked permission from the government. You guys are killing him anyways. Can we please borrow him? We want to run some experiments. Sure. They starved him for 3 days. They put a loaf of bread in front of him. He could look at it, but he couldn't actually touch it. And he was staring at it and shooting daggers. Arrows. He was shooting arrows at this loaf of bread because he wanted it so bad. He was just staring at it. They cut it in half. They found that it was filled with poison. And they decided this is because of the way he was staring at it. Because he wanted it so bad, he shot into it his spiritual anger and spoiled it. ומזה באו החכמים לידי ההחלטה כי אמנם יש בכוח ארסי בעין כמו שיש בכוח אלקטרי והמגנטי וההיפנוזוטי. He said, just like there is an electric power and there's a magnetic power and there's a hypnotic power, those are all the same. So too, even though you can't see them, but with the power of pulatam, ain't safek ad kan divrei ha'iton hanal ha'iton.
It's a newspaper. And Rabbi Raff like
it's a newspaper.
Like that article, right?
What?
Rabbi Raff like that one, right?
I mean, he found it and he put it on the sheet. I didn't put it on the sheet, but he put it on the sheet. Okay. So now what's he saying though? What he's saying is that forget rational explanations of how spirituality works. Forget jealousy. Forget even Torah mysticism. This is science. This is science. This is acknowledged science that man has the ability to do things with his mind and his eyes to things around him.
With the water, you know, I'm sure you saw this water experiment that they put the different
plants
of water and to one they chorus and chorus and chorus, and the other one say I love you like this, and then they check the you know, microscopically, and it looks ugly and this looks beautiful and it looks like this.
They're famous experiments
with plants. You say,
there are newspaper articles like that.
I love you to a plant, and the other one you say,
I love you to a plant.
Well done.
You should do my kiss, see what happens.
That's a lot harder. That's a lot harder.
I love you. I hate you.
You're getting an experiment. A-B test. This one. Let's see what happens.
Youngest daughter, I hate you.
It doesn't mention how long this loaf of bread was out, which is what I'm wondering about.
I see no issues with the experiment. I can't imagine that there's any. It was pretty.
One of the secondary articles that Rabbi Rapp brought was, it doesn't really say anything about reality. What it does say is about what people believe. And especially in those times, it was completely acceptable for people to believe that. Whether that's still true nowadays, whether people would buy something like this nowadays. They definitely bought it at the time. So, but what's interesting is that this is a completely rational, completely physical explanation for Ayin Hara. It just says, this works like that. That's how the world works. That's how nature works. That's what this says. Here's a Chazon Ish, which I actually did not read it inside. I found it somewhere. It said it was talking about Ayin Hara, but I didn't actually read it. You can read it. Sham Yavu Be'Rabbanan Aynayu V'Nach Nafshei. Misoda Tabriya. It sounds like he's going to say that this is also natural. Misoda Tabriya Ki Ha'adam B'Machshavato Humeniya Gormim Nistarim Ba'olam Ha'maseh U'Machshavto Akala Tuchal L'Shamesh Gorem L'Hares U'L'Charban Shal G'Shamim Mutzakim. Said, man has the ability, it's built into creation, to affect the world around him, including destroying things. So it's very similar to the Tosefes Bracha. Mikol makom, he says, "Akol b'dei shamayim v'kol shelo nigzar aleh b'din shamayim la'abdan adavar nitzal." He says, "But Hashem can protect you from it." That's what, in other words, if that's the case, then there's no protection from the Ayin Hara, right? Anybody can go around looking at anybody, but if you do the right thing, Hashem can protect you from it. It's almost the inverse of the Aruch Haim. That's what I would say. If the Aruch Haim says that no, Ayin Hara has no inherent power, the only thing you can do is poke a hole in the force field of Hashem's protection. Chazon Ish says the opposite. He says, no, the Ayin Hara has power. The only way you can be protected is from Hashem's force field. So it's the inverse of what we saw in the Aruch Haim.
Astrology, they say in Mazal Yisrael, right?
Right.
That, yeah, the scars, whatever, they have some influence.
What should we be doing different now in terms of the Ayin Hara? Should we
good.
Be walking around with
a chumstem? So hold on. So before, let's just do the last source and then maybe we'll talk about that. So last source is actually the Rambam. The Rambam writes, the truth is, the Gemara gets deeply into, we didn't talk about it. The Gemara is a concept called Hezek Re'ia, which is what most of the beginning of Bava Basra is about. And it literally means damage done by the eyes. Now, there's a few ways to understand that. Does that mean like you're actually damaging something with your eyes? Or, like the Rambam says, when a person's roof is close to a courtyard belonging to a neighbor, he should build a guardrail 4 cubits high. Between one roof and another, however, 4 cubits are not necessary, for people do not live on the roofs, and there is no concept of invasion of privacy. One must nevertheless make a divider. So he says the whole thing is just about privacy. Just about privacy. You should keep yourself. It's damaging to people when you invade their privacy. There is also, by the way, another.
That's what it means.
Right. Well, it means that you, in general, hezekriya means that you shouldn't invade somebody's privacy, that they have a right to privacy, and you're affecting them when you do that. There are also those who have said that in the name of the Rambam, I didn't find the source for it, but in the name of the Rambam, that no, it's basically a totally rational view of what Rav Dessler says, that the whole thing is about jealousy, and it doesn't work in a spiritual, metaphysical way. It just simply works that you need to make sure not to flaunt yourself, because if you do, somebody will look at you badly, and then they will do something to you. In other words, if you walk around and flaunt your red Ferrari and your fancy sneakers and your whatever, and how many kids you have and how wonderful your life is, then people will look bad at you and they'll get jealous of you and they will conspire to do something to you.
Isn't that what true jealousy is? True jealousy is.
Yeah.
Is the action to actually take away.
Right. In other words, that's the completely, totally rational way of looking at this. That ayin hara is not some metaphysical, spiritual thing. It's just you should keep it to yourself, because if you don't, then people will come after you, whether indirectly or directly. It will happen. Whether they speak about you, whether they do something, whether they get other people to do it. That's a totally rational way of looking at it. What baby?
You know, when the baby born, they usually put the red string or the
The red string is a big problem.
Or the eye or something.
The red string is a problem.
So we're not here talking about mysticism, but we have a short list in the Gemara and the Tosefta, really, about what Darkei Amori is. Darkei Amori are these superstitious things that we're not supposed to do. Of that list, most of the things we don't know what they are, but there is one thing on that list that we do know what it is. And that is using a red string to ward off evil spirits. And it is completely usher. That's the only thing we know about it.
Where
does it come from?
The Torah.
In the Tosefta.
The red string.
Torah has nothing about the red string.
No.
So where do we know from this? What's the red string?
The red string is...
The Madonna says it's okay.
The only place where that string shows up in ancient sources is in the Tosefta, where it basically says it's usher.
Because it's the ones that are sold like by the cotton.
Those I'm sure are fine.
Yeah, those ones are fine. It's different ones. Why? You're not talking about those ones. Like, those ones have been blessed by Makubal.
It's not possible that there's some kind of Hetzel. I mean, they give them out at all the...
Who gives them that?
All the tzionim of the... What?
Who gives them that?
I don't know. Whoever stands there. I mean, if it's...
I don't want any motzi la'az on anybody. But how much
pork? I'm sure they would stop them, right?
No.
Have you ever heard a halachic rabbi encourage you to buy such a thing?
Even on a kubbal rabbi.
It's
the guys who are selling it outside the kotel. We're trying to raise money. Like, it's not.
They put it in the Rachel.
Now,
no, I mean. That goes because it shouldn't be perfect. They do it they put it on a baby, because then the baby is not perfect. Because ayin hara, if the baby is perfect, then he has ayin hara. And then they have this red thing stuck in the middle, so he's not perfect. That means he won't have ayin hara. That's how I...
That's interesting. Wikipedia says that there's maybe a biblical source, because when Peretz and Zerach came out,
on
Peretz's leg, she put that was so that they would know which one it was. That was so they would know which one it was. The same way that we tie a red string around a Bikurim, not because of protection of anything. Anyways, the truth is that, you know, we shouldn't shortchange this, because frankly, ayin hara makes its way into halacha.
And how do you prevent it?
In terms of not giving people aliyot one after another, in terms of some associate it with not saying Kaddish if your parents are both alive, that is mentioned in some of the sources being possibly an offshoot of ayin hara, and other sources. And we mention ayin hara in our tefillah in the morning. Shalom yishlod ayin hara.
Yeah.
So, we need to find a balance, but nevertheless, very superstitious. When you believe in things that you don't understand and you suffer, superstition ain't the way. I think Stevie Wonder was right. Shabbat Shalom. Shabbat Shalom. Shavua Tov. What am I talking about? I've done that before. The Shabbat Shalom business.